Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, it really is a live program. Sorry, I was interrupted by the normal business of family life there at the beginning of the program. My sincere apologies. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you find the Listen Live button. That's where you find the chat room. Head On Radio... Let's back up. That's where you find the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. That's also where you'll find the PayPal button. And the traditional mail address, which I will give you now. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Contributions made by mail should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid. They should be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, because they go to pay bills, not to pay Bob. Okay? Good. The PayPal button is also, like I said, there. And it is your contributions which keep all of this going, and we are in a hole. Just as I predicted, I left town, and consequently, fundraising kind of fell off in a big way. So the hole we're in is $340 deep this evening. And we'll only, unless something miraculous transpires, we'll only get worse. And what I mean by that, I am on the road again this week. Really looking forward to it. It should be a wonderful trip. For the first time in my life, I'm headed to, yes, Texas. No, I'm not headed to yes, Texas. I'm headed to Waco, Texas. I'll be talking with the Waco Friends of Peace at the kind invitation of, I think I got into some caffeine this afternoon, Agnes. Am I auctioneering? Okay, thank you, dear. I will be talking to the Waco Friends of Peace this Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. at Papa Rollo's Pizza there in Waco. If you're anywhere in the neighborhood, I encourage you to jump in and engage in the conversation. We'll be talking about mountaintop removal and how that relates to concepts of peace and war. Did you ever notice that Tolstoy named his book War and Peace? You ever wonder why war comes first? Yeah, me too. Anyway, that's what we'll be talking about in Waco this Thursday evening. I'm leaving on Wednesday, and like I said, I'm really, really looking forward to it. And by the way, thank you for listening, Sparky, our chat room moderator, Sparky, noting, hey, Bob, thanks for streaming Fighting Bob Fest. It was an absolute blast to do, and I enjoyed, there's no such thing as far as I've yet found it, as a bad trip to Wisconsin, or as I like to call it, the Shire. It was just wonderful, good-spirited, good fellowship. That's kind of a fundy, Bible-y word, but I use it in a non-religious sense. I was able to be with some people that I deeply, deeply respect, met some other folks, that I had not met before, which is always a joy. I met Fruity Wisco from my Twitter feed. Also met Deb from my that I've talked with before on Facebook, and of course I was kindly I was kindly hosted up there by our good friend Bruce, and then I got to hang out with my my Pinocchi's pals, my buddy Pete, as well as Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins, from whom you have heard on this program. And if you were listening to Fighting Bob streamed live on the Horn, you heard him speak eloquently and passionately and really, truly movingly on the main panel. And then, what's more, I was invited to participate in, no kidding, I was invited to participate in the panel discussion during the breakout session, and we had a great crowd. I mean, a big crowd show up for that. And Pete and Chairman Mike Wiggins and I all spoke. And frankly, I was just honored beyond expression to be invited to add what value I could to that discussion. It was, of course, it was a quick turnaround trip. Left here at a devastatingly early hour on Friday morning, arriving in Madison about 20 minutes after 12 on Friday afternoon, and then, well, then things got busy. They got very, very busy very, very quickly. Got to attend a benefit concert at which the Indigo Girls played in benefit for an organization called Honor the Earth, which the Indigo Girls hold as a the cause that is nearest their heart, and they played their hearts out in a space that was just gorgeous. The old Capitol Theater that has been renovated into something called the Overture Center there in the middle of Madison, which, if you've never been there, is one of the most beautiful state capitals you're ever likely to see, with the Wisconsin Capitol sitting there on a high knoll overlooking the isthmus between the two lakes, Minota and Mendota. Whoo! Golly Moses, it's beautiful. And, of course, food porn. Let's deal with this quickly. The food porn. Oh, my God, the food porn. I got my fish fix while I was up there. I had a couple of beautiful slabs of walleye that were just mine. And then the cheese curds. And I think I may have introduced a new concept this time through. Mostly they serve the fried cheese curds with ranch. But it turns out where we were, the restaurant where we were, made a wonderful blue cheese dressing. So I said, can I have some of that? And yes, fried cheese curds dipped in blue cheese dressing are, my God, they're good. But I'm going overboard. Then, of course, Fighting Bob Fest was, well, back up. Also got to attend a fundraiser for Senator Bernie Sanders. And if you ever wondered who the leader of conscience in this country is when it comes to progressive issues and progressive values, I'm pretty sure it's Senator Bernie Sanders at this point. Had a brief but satisfying conversation with him about the AIC Act and about the need to step up for Appalachian human rights and Appalachian dignity and Appalachian justice. You know, he just looked at me when I said, because when I went up there, the mindset around Fighting Bob Fest was largely preoccupied with Syria, as one might well expect. So when I looked at Senator Sanders and I said, I really appreciate, as someone who is opposed to war, I genuinely appreciate your stance against going and bombing the snot out of Syria. I don't think I said snot. I said, but you need to understand something. We behave that way over there because of how we behave over here. And we're talking about lobbing a couple of hundred cruise missiles into Syria. I looked at him and said, Senator Sanders. No, I really didn't. I wasn't doing my Jim Kirk, you know, we come in peace. No. I said, but you have to understand, we're talking about lobbing a couple of hundred cruise missiles into Syria when the equivalent of 4,400 cruise missiles are used on the place where I live every day. There is a way to stop it. The bill's already been introduced in the House. It needs to be introduced in the Senate. And I have a sneaking suspicion that you're the man with the courage to introduce it, and I need you to do that. So we are working now on taking that forward, and I hope it bears fruit. If you live in Vermont, you might help the effort by contacting Senator Sanders and telling him that, no, it's not okay to use the explosive force of 4,400 cruise missiles per day on people in Appalachia. That, in fact, and this is the message part, you need him to introduce the Senate version of H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, in the Senate of the United States. And this really is one of those stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once moments. So, and I don't want to tell you what to do. This is not the tell people. There's lots, I mean, well, there didn't used to be very many at all, but there's a considerable number of progressive radio and television programs that are more than happy to tell you what to do, or what you need to know, or things you need to know, or 10 things you should know. This is not that program. This is a conversation that we have as neighbors amongst ourselves. But if you would like to get my back, and get the back of the grassroots activists who got the AIC Act introduced in the first place, and get the back of those of us, I mean, my colleague Bo Webb is pounding the halls of Congress even as we speak. Yeah, they're preoccupied with Syria, but Bo Webb is laser beam focused on bringing a little bit of peace. Well, he's focused on peace in Appalachia, because it's hard to get around the fact that with government sanction, the coal companies, you know, Arch and Patriot and Alpha, are engaged in a sustained decade and a half long bombing program against the people who live here. It really is that very simple. And so, yeah, if you'd like to get my back, our backs, and you can reach out to Senator Sanders, and you can and reach out to your senator wherever you may be, then maybe a nation that learns to practice peace at home will not be quite so eager to go and rain death and destruction on people in far-off foreign lands who don't deserve it any more than what we do here. Okay. Any facts and figures you need are at acheact.org, acheact.org. The tab Ache Science contains all the peer-reviewed published articles describing what is happening to people in Appalachia's Sacrifice Zone, in the mountaintop removal communities. Go there. Learn. The bill itself is also there, too. You can read the Ache Act for yourself and see what an elegant and rather brilliant piece of legislation it really is. Because here's the secret. When we pass the AIC Act will have been passed not by the Sierra Club, not by the Natural Resources Defense Council or the World Wildlife Federation or any of those other... No, it will have been passed by you and me, we, us. It is the single most profound grassroots thing happening in the Congress right now. And it will succeed or fail based almost entirely upon your willingness to go out and help it do so, to succeed. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. Get them going. Because frankly, I don't want to be given, you know, we don't deserve what's being done to us here in Appalachia. And I'm not willing to accept the sort of unforgiven Clint Eastwood answer that deserving's got nothing to do with it. No, it has everything to do with it. See, I've had something on my mind today. This being September the 9th, 2013, this is the one-year anniversary of the death of Larry Gibson, a hero to many. Larry died on what was left of Cayford Mountain, trying to take care of it. 4 days or thereabouts after having had interventional cardiac surgery, he was trying to run a weed eater because there was no one else there to run it. Nope. I was thinking about that earlier today. You know, it's odd how this stuff spins and just, you know, turns around as a grim reminder. Here, on the one-year anniversary, well, on the anniversary, I think 1 year is redundant in this, here on the anniversary of the untimely, unnecessary death of Larry Gibson, I looked in my email box today, and lo and behold, what was there? Well, bust my buttons, it was a blast email from Michael Brune of the Sierra Club asking me to send in $15 to save the wolves from the Keystone XL pipeline. Nothing in there about saving the hillbillies from mountaintop removal, of course. And as noted last Thursday night, of course, doesn't have really much to do with saving any wolves either. It has to do with saving the very nice positions of the upper echelons of the Sierra Club. I mean, we wouldn't want their leader out there swinging a weed eater while Larry Gibson sat in the shade and didn't die, now, would we? Oh, Bob, you're bitter this evening. No, I'm not bitter. I'm outraged. But I'm also inspired. And I'm gonna talk this truth so that maybe somebody else won't die like Larry Gibson died. After he had been used and used and used and used by the big greens. With not a damn dime to show for it or so much as help running a weed eater. So like I said last Thursday, if you get those same blast emails from the Sierra Club saying, send us $15 to save some wolfesses, understand, that ain't going to save no wolves. Hell no. But you know what? You can save some Appalachians. And maybe you can take that $15 and send it along to Coal River Mountain Watch or the Ake Campaign, where it will go directly to doing the work done that you want to see. Done. Getting the work done. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little flustered. But it was a wonderful weekend. Flew back, left about 11 o'clock, left Madison yesterday about 11 o'clock. Got home about 3, or got to Charleston, that is. That's kind of like home. Relatively decent flight all the way in, until right before the very end, you know, those summertime pop-up giant, what are they, cumulonimbus clouds that go just oodles? But yeah, were apparently just circling around Charleston. And, well, our Delta Express pilot decided that rather than going around the damn thing, he'd just dive right through it. And dive he did. I saw my apple juice go into free fall. It was really kind of nifty. And I was sitting in the back of the plane and, son of a, I said. And then a few other, yeah. And a couple of West Virginia. That's the funny thing, whether it's Detroit or Atlanta, when you get on the final flight into Charleston, you know you're back among your own kind. Because all the accents sound the same again. And immediately after we've been thrown God knows how far sideways, dropped God knows how far down, driven back up again inside the confines of that. You know, they look so fluffy and puffy from the ground, don't they? They're violent little hell spawns when you're in them. all I heard was from about two or three rows up, and I knew, you know, I knew I was among the home kind. Dang, some bitch. That was a bad one, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Let me check over in the chat room to see if Lottie's there to rub it in and say, "Oh, I love bumpy plane rides." Well, he hasn't yet, but he will. I'll bet you. Anyway, let's see. What does that mean? Your senators are like a letter to Santa. Jeff? But anyway, he's already gone. I don't know. I don't know what that meant. Anthropogene in the chat room said, "Yes, everyone needs to write or call your representatives." And Jeff responded, "Your senators are like a letter to Santa." Well, Santa's imaginary. Anyway. It was a wonderful time. If you were, by the way, the various segments of the Fighting Bob broadcast are in the Horn Dropbox, and I will be making sure that Ben Birch knows to put them up online if you want to listen. Because it was magnificent. Bernie Sanders delivered a rousing address. John Nichols from The Nation magazine, who is a native Wisconsinite, absolutely set the room ablaze. Powerful, powerful speaker. You know, when you see him on TV, he's so measured and calm, and man, that all goes out the window when he gets behind a microphone among the folks from the folks from home. He had him roaring. He had him going. But pretty good arguments too. Tammy Baldwin spoke. I'll be honest. Never mind me. Before she even spoke, a whole lot of disgruntled Tammy Baldwin voters stood in the front of the room with signs, declaring that they really, really would appreciate it if she would just come out and say she will not support war in Syria. She reminded them then, and the assembled folks, that she had opposed other wars. But did not make a clear statement that she will oppose lobbing a few cruise missiles into Syria for reasons that, well, they no longer surpass understanding. As I was leaving on Friday morning, just while I was choking down that first and last cup of coffee before I went ripping down the mountain, I read an article over in the New York Times by Jody Redoran. Headline, Israel backs limited strike against Syria. There's a reason I went ahead and read it, because it looked like, because, see, I'd been sort of, nothing made sense. This is, by the way, More in Monday. I'm just going to forego the music. And it looks like we're being made more ends of. Because you, me, none of us could figure out what it is that the Obama administration hoped to gain by lobbing some cruise missiles into Syria that would probably wind up killing some people who were more or less innocent of any chemical weapons attacks. Right? I mean, the odds of a cruise missile taking out the person who said in fire, when the chemical weapons, which, well, yeah, the odds of they knocking that person out are pretty damn slim. And we had already stated that we didn't want to get the general staff person who thought it was a great idea in the first place, and we are legally forbidden from taking out Bashar al-Assad. So that left us all kind of wondering, well, what in the hell is it we hope to accomplish? Well, lo and behold, there it was in the pages of the New York Times. What we hope to accomplish, it turns out, is not to stop one side or the other, or to make one side prevail over the other, No, in fact, it turns out that the Israeli position is that what we want to do is to keep one side from gaining the upper hand over the other so that they will continue to butcher each other and the innocent victims who are in between, standing in between the various muzzles of the various guns. Never again, apparently, not counting for much in the high councils of the war machine of Israel, as long as it's, you know, Arabs. Kind of reminded me of what Rahm Emanuel's dad said back when Rahm was chief of staff in the first go-round of the Obama administration. Somebody was given Rahm, you remember this, don't you? Somebody's dad was given Rahm grief because, I don't know, Barack Obama had not done sufficient bowing and scraping to Israel. And Rahm's dad said something like, "Well, my son is the chief of staff. It's not like he's some Arab washing the floors." Yeah, that. So it turns out that Israel's position is that we should lob a few cruise missiles in there, you know, just to show them that we're still paying attention, but that what we want to do is to keep both sides slaughtering each other so that nobody will have time to... Right, you get it. The enemy of my enemy is my friend is one of those political philosophies that winds up in such a way that you have no friends and pretty much all enemies. But then again, it's... Talk about strange bedfellows. Guess who else wants a... Guess who else is standing on the sidelines saying, "Come on, let's use him fight." Why, look, it's our old buddies, the Saudis, and our old buddy, Bandar Bush. Remember, that's what we call him when he comes to visit and hold hands and kiss and walk through the bluebells with us. We've been friends for a long time, and we just call him Bandar Bush. Yeah, the Saudis like the idea of having both sides slaughtering each other. Mm-hmm. Put me in mind of something. It really did. Because I think I mentioned, and no, I'm not relying on it as history. I'll leave that to the idiots who think films like this are history. But there's a line. There's a line in Lawrence of Arabia in which Lawrence speaks to the Omar Sharif character, who was not an actual real character in history, and tells him just what it is, or just what he thinks about the people that he has been sent to help. Let's see if I've got this queued up right.
"Then I will use it." "Your friend was a Hazmi of the Beni Salim."
"I know."
"I am Ali ibn al-Kharish."
"I've heard of you."
"So, what was the Hazmi doing here?"
"He was taking me to help Prince Faisal."
"You have been sent from Cairo?"
"Yes."
"I have been in Cairo for my schooling. I can both read and write. My Lord Faisal already has an Englishman."
"Yes."
"What is your name?"
"My name is for my friend." "None of my friends is a murderer."
"You are angry, English." is nothing. The well is everything. The Hazimi may not drink at our wells. He knew that. Salam. Hut, hut, hut.
Sheriff Ali, so long as the Arabs fight tribe against tribe, so long will they be a little people, a silly people, greedy, barbarous, and cruel, as you are.
Now, see, there's no necessarily to it. I don't adhere to that statement. I don't endorse it. But apparently, there are a whole lot of people who do. Fighting tribe against tribe, people against people. And lo and behold, looky, 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 here it is, almost 100 years after T.E. Lawrence was sent to help the Arab revolt against the Ottoman Empire. And you've got Israel, and you've got Saudi Arabia pushing for, Arabs to keep slaughtering Arabs to satisfy some hegemonic urge. And in what is probably just a pure embarrassment, trying to get the United States of America to do the dirty business of making sure that the slaughter continues. And, what's interesting is I was surprised to see this in the New York Times. More quietly, Israelis have increasingly argued that the best outcome for Syria's 2.5-year-old civil war, at least for the moment, and by for the moment we mean for the foreseeable future, and who gives a damn if little toddler children get blown into a million tiny pieces? More quietly, Israelis have increasingly argued that the best outcome for Syria's 2.5-year-old civil war, at least for the moment, is no outcome. For Jerusalem, the status quo, horrific as it may be from a humanitarian perspective, I love the way that little sort of dependent clause just gets kind of thrown in there and blown past, seems preferable. The status quo, excise the dependent clause, the status quo seems preferable to either a victory by Mr. Assad's government and his Iranian backers, or strengthening of rebel groups increasingly dominated by the Sunni jihadis. Alon Pincus, a former Israeli consul general in New York, said, "This is a playoff situation in which..." I think he's been in the United States too long. Playoff situation? Really? This is a goddamn game? Why, yes, look, it's the great game. It's been going on since the 19th century, and, well, we've just kind of sat down at the table in the last 70 years or so. This is a playoff situation in which... does that mean sudden death applies? This is a playoff situation in which you need both teams to lose, because that's what this is. It's a team sport, slaughter. It's a team sport, civil war. It's just a damn game. And, when we're done with it, we'll have a winner and a loser, and everybody will shake hands at the ending and knock the dust and the filth and the gore and the guts and the blood off of themselves, and everything will be hunky-dory, and we'll wait till the next time we play the game and see who makes the playoffs then. This is a playoff situation in which you need both teams to lose, but at least you don't want one to win. We'll settle for a tie, said Alon Pincus, a former Israeli consul general in New York. Let them both... Whoa, Jesus. I forgot about this part. This from the state whose motto is never again. Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. That's the strategic thinking here, As long as this lingers, there's no real threat from Syria. Great God in heaven. Well, it's not, but, you know. Let me read that again from the former consul general, Israeli consul general in New York. And it's interesting. He sees only two parties. And he means the Assad faction and the not-Assad faction. Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. That's the strategic thinking here. As long as this lingers, there's no real threat from Syria. Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. Wow. I guess I could just sit here and weep. But what good would that do? It's funny. Mr. Alon Pincus, former Israeli consul general in New York, uses hemorrhage and bleed in talking about opposing military forces. But in the meantime, real live human beings, scarcely worthy of the notice of Alon Pincus, are bleeding, are hemorrhaging. And the Israelis, it turns out, want us to help more people bleed and hemorrhage to death. So, in case you were wondering where this cockamamie not a strategy came from, wonder no more. The next paragraph says, Israel's national security concerns have broad bipartisan support in Washington, and the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, that would be AIPAC, the influential pro-Israel lobby in Washington, weighed in Tuesday in support of Mr. Obama's approach. The group's statement said nothing, however, about the preferred outcome of the civil war, instead saying that America must send a forceful message, and, you know, nothing says forceful message quite like blowing up some toddlers. Or maybe a pregnant mother or two. Or a grandfather. Or a grandmother. Or a few hundred of them. No, America must send a forceful message to Iran and Hezbollah. God damn, proxy wars? Thought we were talking about Syria. Oh no, we're talking about Iran. We need to show Iran that we'll slaughter their babies too, damn it! The United States needs to take a firm stand that the world's most dangerous regimes cannot obtain and use the most dangerous weapons. No, by God, that's for us to have and use. Good God. I have read this story again and again and again. And I cannot find anything but bloodthirstiness in it. And have I got my calendar all screwed up, or are we approaching Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement? Because I know Rosh Hashanah just passed, or maybe it's still going on. And yes, AIPAC and its friends are pounding the halls of Congress to try to make sure that the United States does its bloody business. The shame I feel is deep and abiding. Deep and abiding. This is a playoff situation. Sudden death. And if I sit long enough to contemplate who will be doing the sudden dying, yeah, I just want to curl up in a corner, suck my thumb, and weep. God help us. God forgive us. Too bad he ain't there to do neither. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Duncan. Yom Kippur 2013 begins the evening of Friday, September 13th, and ends on the evening of Saturday, September 14th. So, yeah, with the Day of Atonement fast approaching, we get they should bleed and hemorrhage to death. Wowzer. Goddess of Irony hard at work in that Yom Kippur starts on Friday the 13th. Whoa. I wouldn't mess with her. I try not to. But it is Moran Monday, and, you know, from time to time we do run across the occasional bloodthirsty Moran. And we have it today in the form of Alon Pincus. But, and let me say that I'm just a wee teensy-tiny bit nervous about this. I'll be, and I've never done this before, I will be, at least, no, not in the recent memory. I'm going to be getting on an aircraft on September the 11th, 2013. And this being Moran Monday and all, well, that triumvirate of twits, that trio of doofi, Steve King and Michelle Bachman and Louis Gohmert, good God, I don't know how they managed to do it, but they got the United States government, you know, we the people out there humping for that more perfect union every day to buy them what was probably a first class plane ticket to Cairo. No kidding. I don't know how, as stupid as these three are, I don't know how they didn't wind up in Cairo, Illinois, but no, they wound up in Cairo, Egypt. And they had a live press conference. And for me to sit here and describe it for you, well, that's just not going to do it justice. So let's let Representatives King and 1L Michelle and Looney Louie do the heavy lifting themselves.
My name is Michelle Bachman. I'm a member of the United States Congress from the United States of America. And joining me are two other members of Congress, Representative Steve King of Iowa and also Louis Gohmert of Texas. Each one of us has something that we would like to say to the people of Egypt. First of all, I would like to be able to say that we are grateful to be here today. We had wonderful meetings with your new president, with General al-Sisi, and also with the Coptic Pope today, and we were extremely encouraged by what we heard, because what we see in Egypt emerging is a new hope and a new day for the Egyptian people. We see that the economy has a chance now to grow and survive and thrive, and that the people of Egypt can look forward to a great future for their children and grandchildren. It's a window of opportunity that Egypt can now take. And we are here as members of Congress to say we're with you and we encourage you, because together we've gone through suffering. Together, our country and the United States and Egypt have dealt with the same enemy. It's a common enemy, and it's an enemy called terrorism. Now the people of Egypt have spoken, And the people of Egypt rightly are asking questions about the American people and what our level of commitment is. And as members of Congress, we can speak for ourselves and for the people of our district. And I want to assure the people of Egypt that I, as a member of Congress, will stand strong in support of continuing military support for the United States support financially to stand for the military in Egypt.
I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt 1L, Michelle. But this is video. So I have a certain duty to report on what is before my eyes that might not necessarily be before yours. You know, when you look at the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic paintings, everybody's got that heavy eyeliner on that goes all the way out to their temples. Apparently, 1L Michelle thinks that solidarity with the Egyptian people means that she should do the same. I kid you not, she has eyeliner back to her hairline. And you can tell that you've heard that she's struggling. Good God. Weren't these coots? And it's okay, I think you can be female and still be a coot. Weren't these coots hooting and hollering about what America, I mean, didn't they just vote to cut millions of Americans off of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as food stamps? Didn't they just vote to do that? And yet they're standing there saying, we will support military aid, American, U.S., aid America, such as to Egypt. And your brave president, General al-Sisi? Yeah, she did. It's going to break your heart when I tell you that this goes on for 15 minutes. No, don't worry, I won't do that to you. But there's a portion of this that should really... Well, I had to hear it. All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it.
We know that you have been a partner. You've been a partner in the war on terrorism. You've acted bravely here on the front lines. And we want to make sure that you have the Apache helicopters, the F-16s, the equipment that you have so bravely used to capture terrorists and to take care of this menace that's on your border. Many of you have asked, do we understand who the enemy is? We can speak for ourselves. We do. We have seen the threat that the Muslim Brotherhood has posed here for the people in Egypt. We've seen the threat that the Muslim Brotherhood has posed around the world. We stand against this great evil. We are not for them. We remember who caused 911.
Stop it. Just stop it. Stop it. I can't. No. Stop it, Spock. Damn it. Oh, she really said that. I know. You're smacking your speakers now. You're checking to see if your computer has been infected with some sort of godforsaken virus that just makes the speakers spit out crazy stuff. But no, she said it. 1L Michelle just told the people of Egypt, and to the extent that we're sitting here listening to it, the world, that the Muslim Brotherhood was responsible for the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. We remember who it was that killed 3,000 brave Americans. We have not forgotten. Well, and technically that's true. You cannot forget something that never happened. Never mind the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood denounced the attacks when they took place, saying, and this is a quote, a wrong act which we denounce regardless of its doer. But it wouldn't be fair to run this without getting to, you know, Looney Louie. Oh, but wait a minute. Steve King's here, too. And you never know. You never know when he's gonna. There may be some sort of melon-based reference here. I don't know.
So I congratulate the Egyptian people for coming to the streets, for standing up for your own liberty and your own freedom. And we as the American people stand with you, and we stand against the Muslim Brotherhood. The American people do not support the Muslim Brotherhood. We oppose all forms of terror and terrorism. And I'd like to introduce in Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas.
Well, before Looney Louie gets up here. Is it just me, or how is it that three of the they're members of the House of Representatives? I mean, sure, there's a Foreign Relations Committee and everything, but how is it that they go to Egypt and declare what American foreign policy is? I mean, these are constitutionalists, right? These are people who believe that, like Antonin Fat Tony Scalia, that the Constitution is dead, 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 dead. That's what Fat Tony said, and that many deads, too, I think. Dead, 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 dead. Yeah. Really dead, and that if it wasn't there when the ink dried, it ain't really in the Constitution, part of which is the idea that the President negotiates treaties and the Senate ratifies them, and you're walking, talking corn dogs don't have a say in it. I'd be really fascinated to know how this came about. Can teabaggers now just go anywhere in the world and declare what American foreign policy is? Because this is one of those moments where, well, American foreign policy is pretty much a train wreck. And this helps how? And this oh, jeebus. But anyway, here comes Looney Louie, and he's got an analogy for us. Kind of like he had an analogy for us. Well, no, that was direct. No, that was direct, wasn't it? About all those mooching, freeloading, useless eaters out there eating up the Alaskan king crab legs that his hard-working constituents can never afford. But right.
Well, thank you, and it has been wonderful to be here in Egypt.
I got to stop. Have you noticed that all three of them are talking very slowly? Because that's what you have to do when you are talking to the foreigners. You have to talk slowly because they don't hear very fast. Anyway.
The here in Cairo, where so much of the history of humanity has found origins.
Origins? Let him talk, Bob. Don't stop the clip every 5 seconds. Origins. Asparagus. King crab legs. Let's hear that again, sports fans, and I'll shut up.
And we as the American people stand with you, and we stand against the Muslim Brotherhood. The American people do not support the Muslim Brotherhood. We oppose all forms of terror and terrorism. And I'd like to introduce in Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas.
Well, thank you, and it has been wonderful to be here in Egypt, be here in Cairo, where so much of the history of humanity has found origins. So it's great to be here, and I must confess, I have been someone who is very skeptical in Washington about providing military arms, F-16s, tanks, money to Egypt, because I knew that there was a Muslim Brotherhood member, although he said he was a former member, but Morsi was in charge of the country. I was not in favor of providing money and arms to a country run by a former or present Muslim Brotherhood member.
I mean, after all, it's bad enough that we've got a president of the United States who's a... But no, never mind.
I have been extremely encouraged as we've met with the interim president, with General Sisi, and so many other of the leaders of this country, numerous leaders.
Now, did he say General Assisi? St. Francis is, really? St. Francis is running Egypt now? Oh.
It's just really been encouraging. But one of the things that we've seen and that encourages me, we met with for a long meeting, General Al-Sisi and many of the military leaders. And my friend Steve King mentioned again about our heritage in America. George Washington, doing what no one had ever done before him, led a military in revolution, won the revolution, and then resigned and went home. No one had ever done that today. And we met in General Al-Sisi, a man who was leader of the military, who might have a shot at being elected president, but is more concerned about giving his life to help his country, Egypt. This is a country America needs to be very good friends with now and encourage this incredible step down the road of liberty. I was reminded of the words of Thomas Paine. He said, "In America, law is king." Thomas Paine being one of our founders. He said, "Even the most powerful can't place themselves above it. The weakest are never beneath its protection, and no corrupt institution is too big to fail." Those were words from a founder in the United States, and they certainly seem to apply here in Egypt now.
You reckon Loopy Louie would have one of those hemorrhages that Alon Pincus was talking about a few minutes ago, if we were to inform Loopy Louie that Thomas Paine was a real serious, no kidding, atheist? Well, no, he'd probably fall back on another Moran Monday nominee for a little bit later. Our buddy Steve sent this in. David Barton, historical chuckle nuts. Now, you've got this right. General Al-Sisi is just like George Washington. Mm-hmm. And can't. Oh, God. It hurts us as stupid.
Yes, there was. We've seen another bombing this week by the bloodthirsty Muslim brothers who want to destabilize things here, who want that large caliphate to expand, and yet the people of Egypt rose up and made clear to the world, we're not going to have this. We don't want radical Islamists controlling the country. And to know that right here in Egypt, you had moderate Muslims, you had Christians, you had Jews, you had secularists coming to the streets in millions and millions, historic numbers.
Jews? Granted, wait a minute. Once upon a time, there was a massive Jewish presence in Alexandria. That would be about 2,000 years ago. Massive. That's where, and even before that, that's where we get the Greek version, I think it's referred to as the Septuagint, of the Torah. Yeah. Maybe Louis knows, really? There are synagogues in Cairo? Okay. Sure. I mean, if the Mormons can have, if the Mormons can have the K'iche speaking Maya be long lost Jews from the, sure, Louis, you can, yeah, absolutely. Temple B'nai, please don't shoot me. Right there in downtown Cairo. Sure, why not? Maybe I'm wrong.
We just say, we want to live in peace. We want to live with liberty. And this means no radical Islamists running this country. We had heard that the Sinai was being fixed by President Morsi. We find out more information and find he was loading it up with weapons and creating a very destabilizing situation. The military is stepping in, and they're attempting to fix that. But it is so encouraging to know that those who do not want radical Islam, that just want to live in liberty and peace with their neighbors, have taken over in this country.
This liberty shtick is, is this playing for you? Because did the Adolf von Mises Institute fund this trip? Hey, liberty. What are they trying to get a libertarian party started in the land of Chem? Man, where's Anubis when you need him?
Encouraging to know there is a roadmap. There will be elections, and there will be newly elected leaders, not this time a ram through Muslim Brotherhood, but this time people who want to live and let live and allow liberty, and that will, by doing
so, sit, liberty, sit.
So, allow Egypt to see a glimpse again of its former greatness. Yeah.
What the does that mean? Let Egypt see again a glimpse of its former greatness. Are they going? Does Louis want him to go back into the pyramid business? That picture, that big ass cat, that statue, that big ass cat out in the desert's looking a little weather beaten. I think you need a new one. Oh. Mercy.
Jefferson said, Thomas Jefferson was one of our founders in the United States.
Thank you for explaining Thomas Jefferson to the Egyptians. Oh! I mean, we've had some morons, but nobody else for ages on Moran Monday stands a chance when they triple tag team it. Oh God, why didn't they take Chuck Norris with them?
He said, "I've sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility to every form of tyranny over the minds of men." That's what we saw in the military leaders. That's what we saw in the secular leaders of this country, the leaders of the civil government. This is so encouraging. So I know that all three of us have talked, and with other colleagues, and we want to go back.
And since it is my duty to interpret the video portion for you as well, let me simply tell you that Michelle 1L Bachman is standing back to Louis' immediate left rear flank, chewing air gum. I don't know if she just tweaked up a little bit on the airplane but just working them lips. Maybe she had some fava beans. Who knows?
I can encourage our country. Let's help this ally. Egypt is an ally. This is someone that we can trust. This is someone that we can work with. This is someone who can be a partner in the war against those who would seek to rule with terror. I'm just greatly blessed and encouraged. And
blessed by whom? Jeebus? Tell him, Louis. Tell him who's blessed you. Now, this is the same Louis Gohmert who said that Al-Qaeda are sneaking Mexican-looking operatives over the Rio Grande pregnant so that they can have little terror babies. Really? This is the same guy. And what? Huh? Did he meet a couple of Coptics and think he's talking to Christians? You know, I'm not going to be here Wednesday, so we're not going to have a prayer meeting Wednesday, but holy.
Really, to see even the thoughts of forgiveness and love from the Coptic Christian Pope today, and all of those with whom he works, and the kind comments about the Muslims who have been so supportive, and then to hear from moderate Muslims who just want to live in peace. This is a good time. There's going to be growing pains, just as there were in America. There's going to be more violence, more bombings like we've seen this week, because the radical Muslim Brotherhood will not want to give up Egypt without a big fight. Stand strong, Egypt. Stand firm. Don't weaken in your resolve. You have friends that want to see you back on the world stage again.
Stay gold, pony boy. Stay gold. Oh. I can't. No more. Kate, who just got us started this evening with the fundraising. Thank you very much, Kate. We find ourselves now $320 away from our fundraising goal. That's 32 folks at $10 apiece and all the other mathematical permutations. Thank you, Kate. Kate, with a note, says, "Oh my God, how embarrassing. This clip makes me nauseous. They don't know jack shit about what's going on over there. I listen to CBC and BBC, where the reporting is so much more objective and informative. I, too, feel shame over this whole global situation. Taking a long view through a wider lens, I see our society crumbling, just like all the other previous empires have fallen." End rant. Welcome home. And welcome home, indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Kate. And it's hard to take the long view and not see that social crumbling. Anybody who wants to can go and grab a quick internet copy of Ozymandias, and, well, there it is. Marty asking, Thomas Paine was a founder? Well, kind of. You know, these are the times that try men's souls. You know, propagandist, pamphleteer, that kind of thing. And Marty also noticed member of the United States Congress from the United States of America. Dispatched by the Department of Redundancy Department. Yes, yes, Marty, yes. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, once again, it has been shown that the United States and Israel are the two most dangerous nations on earth. I've seen the bloody hand of the Israeli thugs in our attitude towards Syria. Israel is the only country in that region that has bombed each and every one of their neighbors with the backing of the American government. The idea that Syria would do a damn thing to Israel, regardless of what we do or don't do vis-a-vis the use of chemical weapons, well, no one retaliates against Israel, because they know that, right or wrong, we back Israel. There you go. Juanita writing from Ohio, just between you and me, the Horn family's on it. I'm sure they know the elephant in the living room was Israel. The ultimate goal here is to get Syria out of the way so Iran can be taken down. And, you know, people like William the Bloody Crystal, they're not making any bones about it anymore. They say Syria, and then they immediately say Iran. They're going to bootstrap themselves into World War III, and hair lip everybody up Possum Creek to do it. And yeah, I get it, Marty. With regard to Israel and Alon Pincus and his remarks about wanting to see people hemorrhage to death, Marty asks, "Why do your own wet work when you can have someone else do it for you?" Hear, hear. Like I told you, it's just hard to compete when the morons are triple tag teaming you. I mean, we got some real competitors this evening. There's no getting around it. But yeah, all right. Just because I had to listen to the whole thing, so I'm going to subject you to a little bit more of it too.
Thank you.
We think there may be some questions that you all may have, and if you do, we are more than happy to answer them.
You know, I wish that we had an Arabic interpreter on the program, because I would love to know what the Arabic is for who the are you? And where do you think you are, Dorothy?
Do you have any questions at this time?
Crickets.
The one question that's come forward again is it appears that the Obama administration has been backing the Muslim Brotherhood in recent months, and where do we all stand? It's very important, I think, for the people of Egypt to know that we have differences of opinion in our country as well, and that's why we're here before these microphones.
Wait a minute. They went all the way to Egypt to hold a presser to accuse President Not Sure of being a Kenyan Muslim socialist with anti-colonialist tendencies and a deep-seated hatred of white people? What's fascinating is that there was no microphone in the audience. The camera never, ever cuts away to show you anybody standing in the audience, or sitting for that matter. And so when she says, one question we do have, oddly enough, you don't hear any voices saying anything, either in Arabic or English.
Because we wanted the people of Egypt to know. You have very strong voices in the United States Congress that want to stand with the goal that you have of living for a good life for your children here in a growing nation that is going to see more freedom, more jobs, and more prosperity. We're here for you.
Does she not understand that teabag babble speak? No, she doesn't understand. That was purely rhetorical. Doesn't work when people can't afford a basic hunk of bread and a bowl of broth to get them through their day. Now, you've heard a humongous chunk of this so-called presser in Cairo. Honest to Pete. Is it just me, or does it sound like this triumvirate of twits is picking sides in a nascent civil war? And yet there is no one who will call them down. John Boehner wouldn't dare. And meanwhile, Eric Cantor, Cassius, still has that rather lean and hungry look about him. The Congress of the United States, and in fact the entirety of the United States government, has become so utterly dysfunctional, so dystopian, that there was no one who could stop these three from doing this. And there is no one who can censure them for trying to train wreck American foreign policy. We have, in fact, a broken government. And this kind of proves it, doesn't it? Lottie in the chat room, the way Bachman's acting, you'd think Egypt came out of the closet. Now, Marcus, I don't think Marcus was on this trip. No, it's just her and that stud Steve King and that big old hunk of macho beefcake Louis Gohmert. And not a corn dog in sight. Sparky noting, I can't believe the morons are out recruiting other countries to take a vote. Libertarianism gone wild. How long before you reckon they're trying to get a teabagging movement going over there in Egypt? Egypta? man, I don't think, I honest to God, I don't think that anything even, we have no appreciation for the historical nature of this thing they've done. Because I don't think this even happened all the way back to the era of Julius Caesar. You know, he came ashore in Alexandria and was presented with the head of Pompey the Great and was said to have been disgusted by that fact. And you had a lot of people running around trying to grab power in Egypt in the waning days of the Republic. But never in the next 2,000 years anything even remotely like this. We may just have to add this to those little signposts we keep saying that are like, you know, United States government, failed state, and what? What's the distance now? Two and a half miles? Well, so I've been filibustering for a while now, and I didn't even realize it. Like I said, $320 to go to keep up with fundraising for this evening, and if we can't make some of this happen by the time I get back from this trip, there may not be a horn to come home to. Just saying, but it's not a joke. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's going on?
Oh, just listening to your monologue. I don't know, just trying to not listen to much of the news as possible, because it just seems real obvious what's going on. I don't know why anybody is even trying to influence the governmental elites anymore, because it seems like somebody else is making all the decisions. To me, the beauty of all this, I think, is that 90% or 80% or whatever percent of the people in the country are on the same side. Did you comment at all on that? I think you did it a few days ago about that town hall that McCain had, where everyone was ripping on him over in Phoenix. That was pretty nice.
You mean not wanting to go to war in Syria?
Yeah. Nobody wants to go to war. They're only APAC and the military-industrial establishment wants to, it seems like. And all the political elites are just puppets. Pretty obvious. Should be pretty obvious to people. When Louis Gohmert or whoever and Barack Obama, when McCain and Obama are agreeing on policy, someone else is pulling the strings, seems to me.
Sure feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just the more I have this thought in my mind that I wanted to get out there. I can't talk long. I've got a hearing tomorrow morning, my own personal thing. But this is the thought that's come into my mind a number of times. Is that, what we should do is try to redirect these awesome industrial establishments that we have, the military industrial establishment. Offer a no-bid contract to Boeing to build bullet trains and Raytheon to do renewables or something, Get them out of the business. There's no way to fight these people because they're invincible. They make weapons. They're obviously the biggest gangsters and killers that can be made, but they want to make money. Bottom line is they want to make money, and the way they make money is by making weapons. So give them money to build other things other than weapons. And, the thing, I heard a bit of news about how the profits of the military-industrial establishment have gone down from $75 billion, to $25 billion. And this is,
Hey, all that bloodletting and hemorrhaging is good for business, isn't it?
It is, but they can make money other ways. They could make other things. I mean, Remington makes shavers, too, other than rifles, right? Don't they?
Well, I mean, you do what you're best at, right?
Right. Well, you know, they can overpay them for can overpay Litton to make microwaves rather than microwave ovens rather than cruise missile guidance systems. So, I don't know. It just seems like.
But all the microwaves are being built in China now, so.
So bring them back, but change the tax laws or something. I don't know. I don't see any way out other than redirecting the efforts of the military-industrial establishment into something that's positive. That trying to influence these puppets seems useless. You know, when I was in high school, this was a long time ago, like 40 years ago, 35 years ago. When I was in high school, I took this class. And it was a trip. Went to school down in L.A., you know, in Woodland Hill at a really good high school called Taft High School. It was the number one rated high school in the L.A. City School District at the time. But we had this course called Rocketdyne. And I got an up-close personal look at the military-industrial establishment at the time. It was Rockwell International, over there in the San Fernando Valley, Canoga Park. They had a huge complex. They had a number of huge complexes, but they built rockets.
Yeah.
They built like the Saturn V and the Atlases. And at that time, it was a really exciting time. This was in the mid-70s. And they were building the space shuttle. They were doing the run-up to get the space shuttle built. And all this class was they would take us over there. We would meet on this loading dock, and they gave us our badges. We had a badge. You have to have a badge to be even in the place, right? So they would just tour us around the place, and they would take us through these just incredible, like 100,000 square foot machine shops where they were milling equipment and taking us. They took us all through the place. It was really awesome. It was really, really incredible class. And at the end of the class, they took us out to Santa Susana. You know what Santa Susana is? They have a test site out.
Yeah, my California geography is kind of limited, frankly. I hate that, but it's true.
That's cool. Well, it's this really kind of mysterious area. It's on the far west end of the San Fernando Valley, and it's these monumental granite rock mountains that are out there. And you remember that Star Trek where Kirk was on the planet with the Gorn and they were fighting to the death? Remember
that? Yes.
That was filmed out there in Santa Susana.
Oh, okay. Now see, I've got a really concrete reference point. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's this area, and they've got these rocket engine test sites out there. And they tested an Atlas rocket, and we were like half a mile from this Atlas rocket test platform that they had. You know, it's like it was across the canyon from us. And when that thing went off, it was just shaking your body, but it was really awesome, and I was really impressed. I felt privileged to at least be able to see. When people talk about the military industrial complex, I've seen it and I know what it's about. And it was incredible. They were like almost like a self-contained city or a self-contained number of cities. But the thing about it was that I've always thought about is that it's just, you know, whatever they're making, it's an awesome industrial complex. And if we could only just make them or offer them, hey, why don't you make this and something positive, a bullet train? Why don't you make why don't you quit your scientific...
Because when you're in the hammer business, you go around looking for nails. I mean, that's why.
That's true. It's true. But I don't know. There ought to be a way. We were able to retool... the auto business into making airplanes and tanks and during World War II, and then retool it back to making automobiles. And we can retool industry. And I don't know. I just see that as the only way to...
Right. But the thing is, that industry existed prior to the beginning of the Second World War. It was retooled for war materials purposes by governmental dictate and necessity.
Right. Right.
And then it was returned to the post-war, or not, it was returned to consumer goods production, and the post-war America turned toward the toxic idea of rampant consumerism as a way to maintain the economy on wartime levels. I think, Dave, if we're fooling with a model that touches any of this, well, it may not end so well. Since you brought up the evening's first obligatory Star Trek reference, Marty is willing to see your Gorn and raise you a Ferengi.
A Ferengi?
Yeah.
I'm not too good at the Next Generation.
That's okay. Marty was willing to help. He says, remember the Ferengi 34th rule of acquisition. War is good for business.
Yeah.
The rules of acquisition are like the Ferengi commandments.
Yeah. It was just an epiphany I had, or a thought that, passing thought that I wanted to share, that I thought that, you know, cause I don't see any other way of getting them to stop the madness. And I don't know. It seems like they're gonna just, ignore public opinion like they did in 2003 and go in and do whatever they want to do. And, if there was any way to do it, it would
be. Well, the thing is, that's being defined as courage now. Ignoring the will of the American people is being defined by the Beltway boobs like William Crystal. That's being defined as courage. It's going to take a lot of courage to lob cruise missiles in and blow up toddlers against the better judgment of the American people.
So sickening. What are you gonna do?
I know.
What can we do? How do we get out of it? I'm just so sick of hearing about problems and looking for solutions.
Yeah.
But,
I know. But you can't turn away from them, because this is becoming increasing. I know this is cliche, Dave, but this has become an increasingly small planet, and there are fewer and fewer places to hide. Nowhere safe.
It's true.
I mean, maybe if you were wealthy enough, you could live in a gated compound near Rio de Janeiro, but beyond that,
I don't know. From what I'm hearing about what's going on down south, it doesn't sound like Rio's too safe a place either. They're pretty pissed off down there in Brazil, aren't they, these days?
Some are.
Yeah, I hear they're having lots of protests down there, and people are not too happy with it. It seems like the population of the planet is getting more and more uniformly united against the governments that want to do the opposite of what's good for people. You know, just overall, we're in the middle of World War III here. It's the elites versus everybody else. And I can't go on forever. No way.
Well, there's any number of scenarios that can turn into a real honest-to-goodness mess based on this notion of intervention. I don't know if you caught it or not, but Bashar al-Assad actually went on American television.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you say?
He appeared on This Morning on CBS.
Today?
Yes.
Wow.
And he said, basically he threatened the United States, that kind of makes you think that we're involved in a little bit of theater here, because you remember when Saddam promised us Moab?
The mother of all battles?
Yes. Well, on CBS This Morning, Bashar al-Assad said, you're going to pay the price if you're not wise. There are going to be repercussions. It's an area where everything is on the brink of explosion. You have to expect everything. You know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You should expect everything. The government's not the only player in this region. You have different parties, different factions, different ideologies. You have everything in this decision now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, repeated that we have no evidence that, which is kind of true because we haven't really put it forward. We've just shown a lot. I mean, a lot of people, it's horrifying footage of people dead and dying from these alleged chemical weapons attacks. But it's not like there's a courtesy of Bashar al-Assad T-shirt on any of the dead.
Well, he
said, how can you talk about what happened if you don't have evidence?
I was listening to Democracy Now! Over the weekend, and there were people that are saying that our government is refusing to show the evidence because some of it points toward the opposite direction that they want. And to not show us the evidence, that's crazy. That's totally insane. And people are just sick and tired of all this. It's just madness. Madness.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, to go on American television and just try to needle somebody into lobbing rockets at you, lobbing missiles. I mean, listen to this. We're not like, and he spoke English. There was no translation involved here. Okay.
Oh wow, really?
He said we're not like the American administration. We're not like the social media administration or government. We're the government that deals with evidence. In the area where they say the government used chemical weapons, we only have video and we only have pictures and allegations. We're not there. Our forces, our police, our institutions don't think this. And then he was asked whether there would be more chemical weapons used, and he said, that depends. If the rebels or the terrorists in this region or any other group have it, it could happen. I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller to tell you what's going to happen. Meanwhile, I guess, what, President Not Sure is going to address the nation tomorrow evening?
Can't wait.
I'm sure it will be a great speech.
I just can't wait to read the report, because, I don't watch TV. I mean, I'm aware there is an invention called television, and on it there are programs, but I don't watch TV. I just get all my news off various sites.
I understand.
When I have the time, and it's just increasingly what's in the news now, whatever, what the news cycle is focusing on is just disgusting to me, and all of this is just really.
Well, but of course, the other thing that's out there is that now everybody's saying that, well, there could be a negotiated solution if Assad would turn over all of his chemical weapons to a neutral UN team. And, well, then we'd let them go ahead and keep slaughtering each other. See, that's the thing at the, that's the body at the bottom of the well here, is that we're okay with them going on slaughtering each other. You know, except for people like, what's his name, screams at clouds, you know, McCain. He wants to get some serious war on. He's not happy lobbing cruise missiles, by God. He wants to send some mother's daughter, or some father's daughter, some mother's son, and a whole bunch of them into Syria to get some serious boots-on-the-ground war going. And he wants to arm up the Free Syrian Army, or the People's Front for the Liberation of Syria, or the Syrian People's Front, or splitters, whatever. You know.
Whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Sell more weapons.
War is good for business.
It's about the money. It's about the money. And I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I think the only possible way out would be to get the weapons manufacturers manufacturing something else.
I don't know. That seems a little, to me, Dave, that seems a little cart before the horse. We have to stop wanting war. And that is a philosophical.
The polls show that I think that news conference that town hall that McCain had a few days back in Phoenix sounds like I agree with a lot of those people in Phoenix, and I don't agree with them on a lot of stuff a lot of the time. So that's encouraging to me. It was like that whole, gun debate. It's like public opinion. They've finally just come together. They're sick of it. They're tired of the game. I'm tired of the game. I know that.
How many times have I seen the United States referred to as a war-weary nation? But maybe it's not. That implies that there are some that at one point we weren't weary, that we were war energized. Well, I don't know about you, but I was never. Hey, let's take cards in. Because we're using that game analogy that Alon Pincus was using. Let's take cards in Iraq. Let's take cards in Afghanistan and double down in Iraq. Because I was never there for that. And I suspect you weren't either.
I think a lot of people are coming over to a more rational. They're facing reality, the hard way when they have their family members coming back in caskets and all that, or maimed and crippled. When people see that, and you can only go on with that for just so long. Like we had. It's just we've had these period. This is the longest period of war that we've had since Vietnam, isn't it?
Longer.
It's record breaking.
Oh well, what this is it? This marks a new phase in American warmongering, because
sure.
this is that state of. And every empire reaches it sooner or later, Dave. This is that part of the evolutionary empire evolutionary process wherein the empire finds itself in a constant state of warfare.
Right.
And going back to about Vietnam and forward, you know, we were either overtly or covertly, we've been waging war since the beginning of the Second World War.
Yeah.
And that's a grim thing to realize, but if you look at the evolution of empire, it also doesn't bode well for the empire that enters that phase.
Yeah, it looks bad. It looks bad for us.
Yeah, I go back to what Kate said about taking the long view and seeing the crumbling. It's there. It's very much there. Dave, it's awful good to hear from you.
Thank you.
You have yourself a good evening, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Dave calling from Oregon. Thanks. Many, many thanks to Jenny and to Sal. Jenny took us down to $280 to go. Sal just took us down to $270. Thank you both very much. And with that, I have word that Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. If we can raise another $150, Shirley is willing to take care of the other 150, and that'll just leave us having to deal with the rest of the week, and we'll be out of the hole. So Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge has just gone on the table. Shirley will match the first $150 that comes in henceforward. So thanks, Shirley, and thanks to those who match up. Election news from Australia. You know, I saw this because we've got so many friends down there, I can't help but keep an eye on politics there. Up there. I'm trying to think of an upside. Yeah, a different. Up there, not down there. Up there. Because in space, up and down are kind of irrelevant, and the planet does, you know, float in space. Okay, not really float. Don't email. My grasp on physics is tenuous at best. But this from Robert. Hello, Bob and fellow Horn family members. We had a federal election on Saturday, September 7th. I walked up to my local public school where I spent about 3 minutes in line. I had my name checked off. I did not have to present photo ID. Giving my name and address was all that was required. I took my ballot papers and I filled them out with a pencil. I had to wait a moment as an official was going around sharpening pencils. On the way out the door, I placed my ballot papers in the boxes provided. The whole process took less than 10 minutes. outside in the grounds of the public school, they were having a small fete. Cake stalls, sausage sizzles, second-hand book stalls, jumping castles, and face painting. Polls closed at 8 p.m., and counting of the paper ballots started. Before midnight, the outcome was announced. Counting of some close seats continues. The Liberal Party won, and understand that most of you already do, but just for clarification, the Liberal Party is the conservative right-wing party in Australia. The Liberal Party won, Robert says, and Tony Abbott is now Prime Minister-elect. Note, the office of Prime Minister is not mentioned in the Australian Constitution and exists through an unwritten political convention. Nothing much will happen for some weeks until Parliament is recalled, at which time the plans of the Liberal Party are to repeal the mining tax and the carbon tax. Priorities, priorities, priorities. Later, they plan to reduce the national broadband network started by the Labor Party from fiber to the home, 100 Mbps, to fiber to a node somewhere near where you live. As Prime Minister Tony Abbott said in a forward-looking statement, 25 Mbps is enough for anyone. This new NBN will cost 25% less than the original to complete and deliver a service that's about 10% as good. Man, that that compassionate conservatism. Now, because the Liberal Party don't have control of the upper house, our Senate, they're going to have to do deals with minor parties to get their plans through. And as a number of minor parties have already stated they won't support repealing the carbon tax, we face a situation where 18 months from now, we may be looking at a double dissolution of both houses of federal parliament and another federal election. The hope of the Liberal Party is in such an act is that they will win control of both houses and be able to pass legislation without anyone to hinder them. That's all for now. More exciting news as it reaches us. Robert from Oz. Flash, first boat of refugees arrives under Tony's watch. Seems pretty clear to me that Australia has caught the American right-wing disease. It would not shock me a dime's worth to find out that some little nasty Republican operatives who muck about in the political process here were hired on by some Liberal Party toads there. Meanwhile, I saw another story today saying that Norway is edging toward the right wing. You know, the right wing that produced old Anders Breivik. That's the thing about fascism. And I don't throw that word around loosely because I know what it means. It never goes completely away. And one must be forever on guard against it. Because if it gets even a moment in the sun, it sprouts up like dandelions after the rain. Although I like dandelions. But they are quick to grow. Really? Repeal the carbon tax? The carbon tax is working. Australia is not floundering in some sort of economic desperation, you know, the economic desperation that was predicted if the carbon tax should be passed. It's not, no. It's probably a net positive if you take that long view again. This is Long View Monday as well as Moran Monday, I guess. But no, the mining tax and the carbon tax, well, they've got bullseyes drawn on them. Marty noting, if I recall my weekend reading correctly, this new Aussie PM and party were heavily supported by Murdoch Media Group, otherwise known as News Corp. Or as I like to think of it, News Corps. Why am I not surprised? Not surprised in the least. Once again, here, nearly 100 years after the beginning of the First World War that gave birth to the Second World War, Look! Right on time, the rebirth of fascism. Oh, those youngins in, you know, the 18-year-olds or so, in about 2036, are going to have a wonderful time. Except for the fact that that's probably my great-grandchildren. And yours. And it ain't going to be wonderful. You know how that goes. Thanks very much to the Angry Architect helping out from Australia. Just wiped out half of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. $75 more to go, and Shirley will match $150 in contributions. So that's just, well, let's round up. That's 8 people at $10 apiece. And we're in a lot better shape than we were when we started the program. Thank you very, very kindly. It can be done, you know. It can be done. Let's go to the Skype line where Will is calling from Chicago. Hey, Will. Oh, Will.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, I hear you.
First, great news. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me now? All right, good, good, good.
Yeah, all good.
Great news that the Horn is making strides toward covering the deficit. And there's so much of this, see, that I felt inclined to comment because I had actually heard about the situation in Norway from a friend online who lives in Sweden. And he is concerned. He is partially of Middle Eastern descent and lives in a city in Sweden, Malmo, where Bill O'Reilly has tried to portray it as a danger to their country. And he said he's noticed more anti-immigrant feeling rising in the Scandinavian countries. Just that my hope is what we're seeing in Australia, Norway, and elsewhere is perhaps the final stand actions by groups that are on the losing side of history, in my opinion, are also losing in terms of demographics. It's depressing to hear that Australia is going to have a leader who seems to have all the vision of Mr. Magoo. Not quite the good looks. But then again, there's always idiots. I mean, we had Bachman go over, talk to Egypt. By the way, she's saying that Republicans can't beat Hillary Clinton if we cry out to God. We have Chuck Norris, who is using his experience as a 6-time world karate champion to advise Obama not to attack Syria because the only threat is to the guy's ego. This may be a case of a broken clock finally being right.
You know, I saw that story, and for once, and it may be the only time, Chuck Norris has not sounded like a complete lunatic.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. If Obama's playing chess, and this is all something just to pressure Syria to get things done, when it's over, just say, okay, we fooled you. But as things stand, this war is not going to save civilian lives, and that, to me, is the whole point of a quote-unquote humanitarian action. And
well, but beyond that, Will, is there any such thing as a humanitarian missile strike?
Not really, not really. I mean, I'm sure there were people in who were dealing with Slobodan Milosevic's forces in the former Yugoslavia who was glad of the U.S. help. But I mean, although you could argue that the military action there by NATO forced people to the table at Dayton, Ohio for peace treaties, it's very rare that military force makes anything better in the long run, simply because you often have a lopsided peace where a lot of the ends could have been achieved at the diplomatic table. And I have to honestly ask myself, how much political capital is the president using on this, because as things stand, a good chunk of his own party and the Republicans are going to say no. Throwing the proposal by the Russians, which is actually one of the more logical things to come out, and they see that this is all about nothing. And again, I think one thing that is disappointing the president is that too often he picks the wrong battles to wage. This is one where, honestly, if we had an international community standing up and we were applying pressure, okay, I'd be more comfortable. But not even France, which used to run Syria and Lebanon back in the day, is willing to go in. And pretty much it looks like the battle plan is akin to the phrase, bounce the rubble.
Yeah, right. Well, what was it? What was it Donald Rumsfeld said about Afghanistan? It was no fun making war in Afghanistan because there was no more, there was no more cool stuff to blow up.
Yeah, and this sounds like someone who should no more be let near a video game console, let alone a military machine. But again, this is one of the big problems I have with this push towards war. Namely, I don't see it doing anything positive or useful. I mean, if you're going to still have Assad in power, if you are not greatly weakening his military might,
but aren't we ignoring? Well, I think the phrase used earlier by Juanita, an elephant in the room, now that we know that the Israeli position is that we want both sides to just butcher each other and for neither side to win, but just keep butchering each other. I mean, it's not speculative at this point in time, Will. It is an actual fact that AIPAC people are marching up and down the halls of Congress trying to rally support for this attack on Syria.
Right,
I mean, when the former Israeli consul general in New York says that he wants to see Syrians to continue bleeding and hemorrhaging to death, I mean, it's out in the open at that point, isn't it?
It's pretty much, this is one of my great problems with the Likud, which I like to say their symbol should be a hammer because that looks like the only tool they have to work with. I mean, good heavens, having an unstable country on your border is not logical. But then again, I would submit that the policies of the Likud are not very logical, and the only reason Netanyahu's prime minister is that the opposition is incredibly disorganized and really a lot of lack of talent. But the key, what I think is, if we actually push nationally and internationally to try to bring these parties to a peace table, that will frustrate the neocons all over, because even though I don't believe there's a neocon central located somewhere deep under the bowels of Washington or Jerusalem, Project for New American Century, the Likud, and others are all eager to see the same results.
And let's remember, but you know, you're focusing on Likud, and I think justifiably so, Will. But remember, when AIPAC starts marching, they're not just marching with Jewish people who are okay with war in Syria. You have to remember what other allies will be coming to Washington.
Yes, namely evangelicals who believe that if you support a expansion of Israel, you will eventually get the conditions that will bring about the events of the book of Revelations. And many,
right, we're talking about the fundamentalist evangelicals. Remember, yes. it was Pastor Hagee, you know, the guy who hollered, "Starve!" He's the one who started, Christians for Israel or whatever it was that is basically a fundamentalist arm of the policy wing of AIPAC.
Right. Or as I like to say, these are people whose theology I have no care to die for or to see anyone else die for. And I think what is needed is to try to head off this war, try to push for some sort of resolution. And if I was advising the Obama administration, which I'm not, I would simply go to the Russians, say, well, look, you want this to be a 10-year war that continues out of control, then you end up losing an ally and then have to worry about one day the rebels attacking your only military base outside of the former Soviet Union, or do you want to try to get some sort of solution where you don't have to worry about that possibility? So I think there can still be a push for peace. The problem is there's a lot of people who are either making money off of war or who have ideologies that favor...
twisted, psychotic ideologies, Will. I mean, I think it's okay to use those adjectives in front of...
twisted, psychotic, and let us call it evil. Evil in the sense of actively desiring harm to others, regardless.
Just out of curiosity, I'm betting your Middle Eastern geography is better than my Middle Eastern geography. Can you tell me, relative to the Israeli-Syrian border, where Har-Megiddo is?
I actually have to check, but it is in northern Israel, and I can Google that quick. Wrong panel. Megiddo. It's about 30 miles southeast of Haifa, and it really isn't that close to Syria. It is kind of north of the West Bank, but in theory, if you skirt around the edges of Lake Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee to the Christians, you could drive there. But we literally have people who want Armageddon simply because they believe
it'll bring back Jesus in his holy roles,
and that they will be uplifted, and everyone that they've despised will be downtrodden.
The only reason because when you've got people talking about hemorrhaging and bloodletting and things like that, the first place that the fundies will go is to the Book of Revelations. And just to understand the level of bloodshed that they yearn for, and this is what they're going to be on their knee. I mean, I'm not saying this so much for your benefit, because I know you already know. But for anyone who doesn't, these evangelical Christians, before they go doing AIPAC's business in the halls of Congress, will begin their day on their knees, hands fervently clasped in front of their freakish little faces, imploring, "Come, Lord Jesus, come, Lord Jesus." Okay? And if you read those books, what you want in order, what Jesus is looking for, and it's, you ever seen the folks going out at your Rippy Mart at the gas station to check how much fuel's left in the underground tanks? They got that long stick.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Jesus has one of those too. And what they need is for the blood to run as high as a horse's bridal, is it?
Actually, I think they would like it to go up to the eyeballs.
But I mean, there's a reference in the book, and I can't remember it. But, you know, Jesus reaches down from on high where he sits at the right hand of God, and he dips his gauging stick into the blood, and as soon as it's as high as the bridle of a horse or whatever it is, then he jumps in his holy rolls, and he comes down, and the fundamentalist evangelical Christians get to start killing Jews.
Yes, and this, of course, reminds me of what happened in the Crusades in the Middle Ages, because in Germany and France, a lot of the Crusaders took a detour to kill a few Jews along the way, or others were inspired to do so at the height of the Crusade. And to me, rather than... this is one of my problems with the literal interpretation of a text, when it can be read in many different ways. My understanding as a non-Christian about the Book of Revelation is that, to an extent, it may have been a kind of political work, with the beast actually being Nero, since the numbers add up.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
To his name. It's kind of like a work condemning the Roman Empire without openly saying so, lest the people spreading it have their head and neck sent to several different places. So it's just that if you are not aware of the history, the background, and the like, you can end up in very strange places. So literally, I find it distressing that we have people praying for the end of the world, rather than trying to build a better world, which I believe a certain itinerant rabbi and carpenter would have done. But then again, I'm afraid that were he somehow to appear among them, they would not recognize him at all, let alone.
Indeed, indeed. let about a 5'2" tall, curly-headed, broad-nosed, dark-skinned guy in rough-spun garments and no shoes walk into Joel Osteen's megachurch, and they'll call Homeland Security.
Exactly.
I mean, he won't even be able to get Love Thy Neighbor out of his mouth before he's hauled off by the ICE people, probably down to the T. Don Hutto Correction Center.
Yep. Well, this is something where I think we have to be glad that there is a big push in trying to prevent a war, and I've signed numerous petitions. I'm calling my congressman again in the morning after contacting him a few times, and I suspect that what we are likely to see is perhaps a lot of people, for their reason, saying, wait. Well, the Tea Party is, we can't give Obama anything that could possibly make him look good. For a lot of others, it's, this makes no sense whatsoever. So, if I may use a line that was used about a British official, I forget the official and the person who said it. There was an official who was loved by many, including kind people, and those who were corrupt who could perhaps take advantage of him. And a commenter said, of course he would be saved, because all the power of God and mammon were coming to his rescue. In this case, all the power of reason and stupidity may end up keeping us from a needless war. And I would find that very ironic. I mean, to say the least. Too often, we fall into a rhetoric of seeing an enemy. Sometimes there are legitimate concerns, but let's face it, lots of wars could be avoided. We could have avoided the first Gulf War by telling the ambassador to Iraq in 1991 to say, Saddam, we don't want you invading Kuwait. For one thing, it'll look bad for you. It'll freak out the Saudis. Harbor Regional Peace Conference, and you end up looking better. Sure, we would have had.
But there's a problem inherent in that, in that the Saudis want the same thing the Israelis want.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now regarding Syria, yes, because they have their own reasons to hate Assad. It's, since he is aligned with Iran, in their eyes, it's the old Sunni versus Shia conflict. And they want to be the big voice in the region and have Iran just...
And just yeah, because remember, there's a sectarian bias as to who runs the amusement park there at Mecca.
Right.
And I don't,
And also, there's a lot of prestige and influence at stake in the region. And I think what we're going to see is some factions still pushing for war.
And Sunnis are Wahhabists. I mean, Wahhabists are Sunnis, right?
Well, the Wahhabists are actually an ultra, ultra strict sect of the Sunnis. I would say that if you can think of Sunnis as Protestants, think of the Wahhabists as extreme Calvinists.
And that's about fair. Well, Will, it's awful good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you. And everyone, remember, Bob could use a little help since he'll be on the road doing some good deeds this month. So
yeah, in point of fact, Juanita just helped out. And as a consequence of that, we only need 6 folks at $10 a piece to finish off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, which I'd like to hope we can pull off in the next 52 minutes.
I think there's a good chance.
And then we can sort of worry and fret about tomorrow and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday after that.
Well, sounds good. Bob, pleasure chatting with you. And everyone, let's remember, this is Conversation Radio, so we need your voice and your support here.
Take care, Will.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Will calling from Chicago. Also on the Skype line, Duncan is there, Sparky from the chat room.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Duncan?
I'm pretty good.
You're far enough north in California that you can keep an eye. You've been kind of keeping an eye on the secessionist movement in the Free State of Jefferson, right?
Oh yes.
I mean, are people taking it seriously up there?
Oh yes.
Oh God.
All the teabag chapters are riled up.
Well, and apparently it's. What? It's catching. Did you catch the secession story out of Western Maryland today?
No, I missed that one.
No, Western Maryland wants to secede from Maryland now.
Oh, geez.
You know, this is how that whole little dust-up started in, 1859, 1860?
Well, the only thing that worries me is it's Alec or... Koch brothers, if somebody moneyed up moves in and starts stirring the pot.
Well, don't you think there had to be a little moneying up just to get it going?
Well, there's some rich ranchers up in Siskiyou County. I mean, there's some big cattle ranches up there. There's people with money up there that just don't like the fact that they have to deal with Southern California. You know, the biggest thing is, well, they want our water. They want to tell us how we can do things on our land,
and we just want to consume all we can consume, and to hell with them socialist job killing regulations, right?
Yeah, regulations too. State regulations, federal regulations. You know, the Forest Service or whatever, whoever. They just don't like it. But they're going to the other counties around here. There's a guy in my county that's going to be at the county fair coming up with a petition to get people to sign. And there's a rather large teabagger constituents here in Tehama County, and I'm sure they'll get a bunch of signatures and they'll get a bunch of people riled up. And they're going to a little county. Well, it's not a little county, but it's a county with hardly anybody in it. Modoc County is between Nevada and Oregon. It's right up in the upper east corner of California, and it's where my stepson lives, and it's It's crazy land up there.
I was going to say, are we talking?
That's the land of the jacked up pickup trucks and Easy Rider rifle racks.
And people who wear Velcro shoes because they're baffled by shoelaces?
I don't know about that, but they're avid hunters and stuff.
God.
But there was a, in Sunday's paper, the record search letter, I'd send you a link, but the damn newspaper site is by subscription only.
Paywall.
I might be able to send you the picture of the state after we're done talking, but there's a comparison on the front page. And if there was a state of Jefferson, the counties they want to include, the population would be 932,212 people. The poverty rate would be 18%. The median income would be 43,300. College educated rate would be 20%. And the Republicans are 190,944 registered. Democrats, 158,468 registered. And 102,608 undeclared. And then right under this picture, they do a state comparison. And guess which states they compare to?
West Virginia.
Yep, it's a middle one.
Oh, my God. You can have your very own West Virginia. But
the poverty rate is exactly the same, according to this.
Yeah, all you need is a little blasting, and you're right there.
Yeah, but I don't know what they blast. They get clear-cut forests.
Probably something under that dirt, and there's always somebody willing to go prospecting for it. Tell me, does these numbers include the Oregon counties, too?
No, they're going after there's a southern Oregon county, Jackson County, which is right on the border. They're trying to interest them, too.
I wonder
which would be Medford and Ashland. And then they'll probably go after the one where Klamath Falls is, too.
Oh, my God. But, well, I mean, this is very real. I mean, a lot of people look at this and go, ha, 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 look at the silly teabaggers. They're deadly serious. I mean, I think this is a next, you know, I saw in the chat room a minute ago, maybe it was, it was Will who said maybe this is the last stand of the Tea Partiers. No, I don't think this is the last stand, Duncan. This is the next step. I mean, these people are real honest-to-God secessionists. I've got audio here that I listen to, and I don't know if I've got it in me to actually play it because it is so vile. It is so hateful, so filthy, that I don't know that I could even play it under the guise of, well, you know, this is journalism, or this is sort of like journalism, insofar as you're not going to be able to hear this without a bunch of beep, 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 in the middle of for-profit media broadcasting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a teabagger out there named Christopher Cambron, and he has a YouTube page called American Patriotism. And he just uploaded this vile... I mean, you know, for me to say something is vile, I mean, I'm not shocked by language or anything. But this has everything going for it, and this guy is a sure enough card carrying member in good standing teabagger. And so that, you know, they really are, the great 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 grandchildren of the idiots who went to war in 1860. And I wonder, Duncan, if people understand. This isn't just some sort of silliness. These people are serious. They want to dissolve the union. I mean, do the teabaggers up there who are hooting and hollering, and the people who side with them, do you get a sense? I mean, do they know what the real goal is?
No, they're just pissed because they don't feel like they have representation in this state assembly and the legislature.
Right. They don't have representation because they're in the minority.
Well, they don't have representation in Congress either because we've had do-nothing Republicans for years, too.
But if they, so what, they'd feel better about being in California if they could just get some, get a teabagger majority in Sacramento?
Oh, that would help. But it ain't gonna happen as long as Southern, the coastal, all the places where people with highly intelligent educations and everything live in the state where they can make some money, you know.
Well,
or outnumber the teabaggers, it's just going to be. But it's.
Well, yeah.
I just wanted to say that the one guy, I don't know if you read this story, but the five county supervisors in Siskiyou County, and the one guy that's the head of the board, I can't remember his name, but he said he didn't vote to succeed because he took an oath to, you know, to defend the state constitution of the state of California and the United States of America, I guess. That's why he said he couldn't vote that way in support of succession or whatever they were talking about.
And I wonder if we, the people out here working on the more perfect union, Duncan, do we get to, let's just run this out there a little further. Let's say these walking cabbage brains succeed and secede. Do we get a say-so in them naming their state Jefferson? Because I think Mr. Jefferson would probably object. I mean, wouldn't it be better to name this the state of Birch? As in John?
Or
the state of Kliegel? As in Grand?
State of Shasta, because that's the...
Oh, so this is where Mount Shasta is.
Oh, yeah, just south of the Wairika.
Jesus.
But Mount Shasta City is not conservative, just the northern part of the county. There are some cool people in Mount Shasta City and Dunsmuir in the southern part of the county.
Well, the whole area is just flipping beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some high desert area and there's some strange places on the east side, but the west side of it is really mountainous. And
well, I'm not one of these people who necessarily holds that deserts are, by definition, ugly. I mean, they have their own beauty.
And there's a great river runs through there, called the Klamath, runs out to the sea through.
Hence Klamath Falls?
Kind of. I mean, it kind of starts over there.
I got to work on my geography.
It comes out of southern Oregon, and then it runs through northern California out to the sea over above Eureka.
That would have to be beautiful. Relatively clean?
Well, it looks a little strange when you look at it because it's got a lot of slime that grows into it.
Ew. From, like, farmers and... Ranchers?
No, it's just like a moss kelp type thing.
Oh, okay.
It grows on the rocks, and it might have a lot of these weird bugs in there. But the fish run up, the salmon run up it and everything. Not as much as they used to.
I hope people take this as more than, because every time I've heard this story mentioned, it's been done as, you know, the kicker at the end of a newscast, the funny story, you know, little girl feeds ice cream cone to squirrel, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This has been offered up as, hey, and here, and look at the zaniness going on in California now. Here's the...
Yeah, well, all you have to do is Google State of Jefferson and you get all kinds of stories.
Oh,
papers.
And by the way, we have the best by far suggestion for a name of the state. Just came in from Dr. John Duncan. The state of Rand. Capital, Ionsville. Suburbs include Galt's Gulch, Freedmansville, and new Greenspan. Everybody's got their own fluoride-free water supply. It's a toothless paradise.
Well, we do have a French gulch, but and we've got some weird places. I'll have to get you a list.
Wow. Well, Duncan, thanks.
Old mining places. But one other thing I want to throw in there before we go. Sure. You were talking about Norway.
Yeah.
Dad and I were looking at talking about the Tesla car.
Yeah.
The Tesla S. Guess where the only supercharger stations are in Europe?
Norway?
Yes.
There's
six of them over there. So evidently they're selling Teslas like crazy over there.
Well, when you consider the price of petrol, why not? I would imagine one of those would probably pay for itself pretty darn quick in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But Elon Musk apparently has goals to build a boatload more too, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, you can go on their site, on their Tesla site, and you can even start your order for a car for $2,500 down.
I know, I've seen that. It just.
But we were watching the Jay Leno Tesla S test drive today, and then I just did a, because I was telling him about the supercharging stations they're putting in all over the place. And you can charge your car for free, because the charger only fits a Tesla.
And, you know, like I said before, I had one of those zip past me. Ferg was with me at the time. Zip past me in D.C. on the way headed out of town. And we both had to stop and, what was that? And then I flashed on the, and I recognized the logo, and I went, holy cow, that was a Tesla. Because that would be the only car that would pass you at like 100 miles an hour making no noise at all.
Mm-hmm. I had one pass just a couple of weeks ago right here in town, and I drove past and I looked at it and I thought to myself, that's a Tesla. So it pulled out right behind me, and then I started slowing down so it could pull right up behind me, and I could see the Tesla emblem on the front, and then it pulled out and passed me, and I rolled my window down to see if I could hear a sound. There wasn't no sound.
No,
at all.
It's not. It's just, I mean, it's kind of eerie that way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And we were in this school zone when it passed me, where you have to go slower. And then as soon as we got to the where you could go 55 again, the guy just stepped on it and just left me in the
dust. Yeah, because the thing's got torque to climb trees, right?
Right.
I mean, the 0 to 60 numbers are just silly. Yeah, one of these days. One of these days.
Just the riding one.
Well, have you seen the next model that's coming after? The crossover sport utility looking thing?
Not yet. I haven't seen any pictures.
Oh, look on the website. It's there. I think they call them hawk wing doors. You know how the gull wings came up so it made it really hard to park in a regular parking space with like a DeLorean or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Well, these come up above the vehicle too, but they do so in such a way that you can park in an ordinary parking space. And the room in them is just crazy. I have a feeling we're both channeling Brother Albert at this point, if he's out there listening, because, you know, he goes into honest-to-God raptures over the Tesla.
Yeah, well, I can see on the site it says you can finance one for, like, $575 a month.
Jesus.
For how long? I don't know.
Well, but I mean, what's the wear and tear on that thing? I mean, there's got to be less moving parts than there is in an internal combustion engine, or even in a diesel.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. Well, Duncan, have yourself a good evening, and please give all of our kind regards.
Oh, you want the score of the football game?
Oh yeah, please.
It's still 12-7 Philadelphia.
Did you see that little Timmy Tebow has had an offer?
No.
Yes, the Arena Football League, the L.A. Kiss, owned by the band Kiss,
yeah,
has offered to give little Timmy Tebow a contract.
He said, I'd never even heard of the L.A. Kiss.
Neither had I, but the idea of Gene Simmons going up and vomiting blood on him just thrills me to pieces. Duncan, have a good night, brother.
Okay, you got me laughing now.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye. And that's Duncan. Duncan is a moderator in the Horn chat room, as well as the longstanding moderator of the Horn Skype chat group. Great fun. You should check it out some evening. They're usually going in one form or another right after Malloy closes at midnight, just about every night, and voice on Friday nights via Skype. If you want to hook up, shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I'll send your Skype contact info, include that in the email, over to Duncan. Marty with a note. You mean the Tesla Model X, the crossover SUV? Yes, that's the critter. And a note of affirmation, I guess, of a sort coming from Kate. Oh, come on. You gave us one L. Michelle. You got to give us this A-hole. Come on, Bob. All right, if time permits, I gotta get a couple more calls in. But, yeah, we'll try to bring on the nasty racist teabagger. Hey, welcome to the program.
Really?
Well, no, I mean, you're not the nasty racist teabagger, Bill. I mean, that's not what I was saying.
No, I have a lot of weaknesses, you know.
That ain't one of them.
No. I like that Tangeray too much when I was young. But that's another story. You guys happen to mention fishing. There was a guy who was a folk singer out of Painesville, Ohio, out of Lake County. I'll tell you, the typical clothing, blue work shirt, jeans, Levi's, and fry boots, buddy.
Yep.
And his name is John Gurock, and he has written several books on fishing. He's out of Wyoming, I think, now, the last time I talked to him. And my God, this guy was, he was working on his master's in philosophy the last we talked when we were young. I think he's got his doctorate by now. So he writes books on fishing and lives out west. And fly fishing, you know, one of those kind of guys.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, when he was here, I never knew he fished. And I didn't start till I was in my 40s. And, man, I mean, Bob, on my wall, I got a picture of me holding a 7-pound walleye that I got off the, standing on a wall at about 4 in the morning on East 72nd and the lakefront of Cleveland. Because the shad used to come in when the water temp hit about 62.
And the walleye would chase them.
They would chase them, buddy. And I was throwing a 9-inch sinking Rapala on a rod that I used to use when I fished for steelhead trout in the Grand River. Man, I got into that so heavy in my later life I was disgusted with myself. I got enough money tied up in rods that I don't use anymore to start a store. But that was a long time ago. That was a pleasant time. How'd it go for you this weekend?
I missed
the first part of the show, so fill me in.
It was a great trip. I got my walleye while I was up there.
Good for you. What did you use?
Oh, no, I didn't fit a fork. A fork. I used a fork, Bill.
Lazy liberals, I'm telling you.
Right, yeah. I was fishing from the dining room of the Avenue Bar in Madison.
Oh, that's tough up there. That's
well, you know, you got to cast real hard to get it all the way to the kitchen.
Yeah, well, I was standing.
But what a place that was! I mean, my life gets transformed every time I go to Wisconsin. So we're sitting there, we're sitting there having dinner. My genial hosts and Michael, who chimes in from time to time, and lo and behold, we didn't go for Friday fish fry. We were there on Saturday evening instead, and they've got these lovely little traditions in Wisconsin. And one of them is the idea of supper club.
Okay.
And maybe everybody else, oh, yeah, well, supper club, Saturday night, sure. Well, not little redneck me. No, never heard of it. You know, live in a bubble. It's a coal dust-covered bubble, but it's a bubble.
I never heard of it either. I know there's a nightclub they used to call supper club.
Right, but this is a different deal, apparently, because on Saturday nights, and so lo and behold, these black pants-wearing, red-shirted, I want to call them a polka trio, because there was an accordion involved, Bill.
Oh, yeah.
It was a guy with an upright bass, And what's that trumpet with the up facing bell? You know, that takes about a 45-degree angle instead of
the kind that Dizzy Gillespie used to use.
Yeah.
He used that style horn. There is a. It wasn't a flugel. It was.
I wanted to say a flugelhorn, but I don't think that's it, is it?
No, it was a trumpet with the Dizzy Gillespie bell, probably.
So there's a guy with one of those, and a guy with a bass, and a guy with an accordion. And they're walking around through the restaurant kind of like, I don't know, the upper Midwestern, central to Eastern European version of a mariachi band in a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
Only, you know, then again, we have Michael Savage to thank for. I remember way back when David in Tennessee told us about the night that Michael Savage explained that the Nazis brought the accordion to Mexico. No kidding.
Well, I often wondered where and how the accordion became part of Mexican, you know, natural Mexican music, but they had accordions in it.
So these guys are walking around, and, you know, every third song, of course, is on Wisconsin.
Of course.
But they come over to our table, and Bruce says he's from West Virginia, play him some hillbilly music, and they launch into Rocky Top. So I'm sitting in Wisconsin listening to a polka band play Rocky Top, and I mean it was epiphanous. And I immediately tweeted something about, you know, a polka band playing Rocky Top in Wisconsin. And just the hashtag, only in Wisconsin. I mean, it was so cool. It was just so neat.
You're right.
Oh, and by the way, you've got a compliment in from Dr. John via email. What I wouldn't give to go fishing with Bill, and I don't fish. So,
well, I'll tell you, I didn't really get serious until I was in my 40s, and I just went berserk to learn all the different techniques I could learn. One of your neighbors from Kentucky taught me how to use that safety pin spinner to catch bass. I had a few good bass players too, but it's an amazing. A lot of musicians I know, James Cotton, Muddy's old harp player, he loved it. We talked quite a bit. It was something about the solitude and the. I used to love these electric motor lakes around northern Ohio where you couldn't have a gas motor. Beautiful, quiet, peaceful, you know. No, not that I dislike water skiers, but I sure didn't like them when they'd come past me in a 14-foot boat and they'd swamp you.
Oh, yeah. And
appreciate that, you know. And they wouldn't appreciate it if I'd pulled a pistol and said, you want to try to drown me here? Take that, you. You like it, you know, because people who don't think about other people around them in this world bother the hell out of me. You know, you take into account everybody that's around you and what they're doing, and you don't do things that are stupid, you know.
Right.
I like the electric motor lakes. Well, I think it was the biggest one I had was like a 3-horse electric, and which is real big in England, because. England and other parts of Europe because of the price of gas. They're fishermen.
Well, I haven't fished in eons.
Well, they have tournaments over there where people are along the bank of a river with a staked out area. They're supposed to keep their stuff in, you know, in that area. Because gasoline, you think it's bad here now? You know what it is in England and France and Germany?
Oh, pretty good idea.
Are they smarter than we are or what?
Well, they have neat stuff like roads that they're not grinding up into gravel.
Well, you hit me in a sensitive area because I'm a half-assed historian of public transportation, and we have crap in Cleveland. You might as well buy your own horse. You're better off. The transit system is garbage. And when I was a kid, they still were running streetcars here. And then those trolley buses, the four-wheel, rubber-tired, two-pole electric.
Yeah.
That were quiet and, you know, but we got to... In fact, the guy that ran Cleveland Transit System, he was the guy who went out and built BART in Frisco, San Francisco. Excuse me, my San Francisco friends just hit me. All of them all at once. That hurt.
Yeah.
He built the Bay Area, the BART, you know, because he built the electric rapid here where it goes... from the west side of Cleveland to the east side, and that's it. you know, no other lines. It's kind of really a stupid thing. If it didn't go to the airport, it would be totally useless. Because the ground transit here is just, we had these local small buses that used to work the neighborhoods, and they got rid of those. Because, my God, you know, a guy like me who's lost his ability to drive a car, I'd love to drive a car, but you'd hear me blocks before you'd see me, you know.
Right.
What's that crashing sound, you know? Yeah, fishing is something I got into late in life, but anyway, this is like the BART strike out there. You ought to hear these people out of San Francisco, a lot of them calling in, complaining about how much money these guys are making. What is with this country, Bob?
It's all upside down, Bill. It really is. And that's one of the signal markers of the success of the right wing.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at somebody who has a decent living and saying, I think everybody should have a living like that, the right wing have taught a certain significant portion of this country to look at people with a decent living and benefits and wages and health care and retirement and all of that, and say, no, they don't deserve it. I want them down here wallowing in the filth with me.
Well, I'd like to ask you, somebody who's a teacher, because I have a buddy who's a history teacher, and when he first met me, the first thing he said, where'd you go to school? Well, the thing they call the public library, that's where I learned most of what I know. And watching.
Amazing what you can find in there.
And talking with other people who lived. And doing all kind of, I worked on knitting machines. I used to repair those when I was still in school. They were patented in 1906. I could set them up and make sweater. You know, we were knitting sweaters for Mr. Roebuck's partner.
Yes.
They were buying from us. And one of my war guys I worked with, first name was Levi, and he had these funny numbers on his lower, you know, above his hand.
Yeah.
You know, the place was full of people from you know, your part of the world, and refugees from Hungary, and you know, African American or black folks, whatever you want to call them. That, you know, and guys like me that lived in housing projects. Because Rick Smith and I had that in common. I know where he lived. I looked at those places. My family did when I was a kid, when I was a little one. Those places were built for the workers who came up here to find jobs during that altercation, you know, from 39 to 45.
Yeah, the dust up.
Yeah, well, see, Americans don't think of 39 to 45. They think of 41 only.
Right.
That's what they know, you know.
But we were ramping up in 39 to support land lease.
Yeah, exactly. I have a good Max Hastings book in my CD player that, man, I actually learned about the mess around in Norway between the British, French, and Germans. And a few other things that, you know, I never knew anything about the Finnish experience. What was with Hitler? He was stupid enough to want to take on the Russians. Was he nuts?
Well,
we know he was nuts, but...
Well, you know, what, he was a corporal?
Nuts.
He was a corporal. He never really got to the high-level strategic and, you know, thinking... And the general staff didn't want to cross him because people who did that got dead in a hurry.
Yeah. And what was really hilarious...
So if he wants to open up a two-front war, you know, far be it from them.
Italy taking on Greece, they got their asses whipped until the Germans went in and helped them out.
The Italians even got pushed around in Libya, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's why Hitler sent Rommel in there. Hell, the Italian tanks were so bad, the guys called them fireboxes. The Italians that were fighting in them. I mean, it was just amazing that the shit that goes on, and you wonder why people don't seem to get any smarter. Look where we're at. All this talk about, about Syria. Jesus, God.
Yeah, I know.
They're a problem. And, yeah, I never thought much of Bashir. I never thought much of his father either. You know?
Right.
But on the other hand, who's pushing us? Who's directing us to go in there and straighten this out, so to speak?
Everything I've read over the weekend says it's Israel.
Yeah.
Well, Israel right. And the Saudis. There's another thing out there that has said that the Saudis and some of the Gulf states have offered to pay for it if we'll just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting Nike'd into a dumbass war. Just do it.
And you say, you know, I was always very, very pro-Israel from the time of Ben-Gurion, Golda Meir, and the one guy who got shot, the one premier, I can't think of his name offhand, because I believed in the foundation of that state. And my first wife was, well, I'll make a joke out of it, one has four legs and chases cats, and Mrs. Katz and her attorney. It was an old joke from the old ethnic joke days. And their family welcomed a guy who's most...
I'm sorry, that delayed reaction, that just took me a minute.
It's pretty bad.
No, that's...
It's one of the oldest jokes in the world. I mean, but, you know, these folks, that family welcomed into the family a kid from Germanic background, and my father-in-law and I would talk, and I, you know, of course, I was never what you'd call a Nazi supporter, that's for damn sure. My grandmother left Germany around 1900, and my mother said she was in tears, my grandmother, in 1946. When, you know, they kept that, all that shit that was going on over there was kept out of the papers here until after the war. And the same thing about what the Japanese did in the Philippines with that death march. That was kept quiet. And, the Japanese military was, in their own way, as miserable as the Germans were. My one German buddy said the Germans were the kind of people that always kept accurate records of everything, even when it was horrible. He said he was making fun of himself because his father was a German, a lieutenant on a German sub, and a POW of the English before he emigrated here after the war.
Oh, my God.
It's funny. One thing about music, Bob, you meet them from all over the world, people. You meet him, and one night I'm playing at the Euclid Tavern, and in comes Kim Wilson from the Thunderbirds. And I had to get up there and with him and play on stage and try, and I didn't have anything to hide behind. No barrel to put on or nothing, you know. What a player that man was. A time and a place, so many things were time and place that, and my feelings are hurt because I don't think they teach history the way they used to. And as I say, my one buddy who taught history to La Tourette's kids. And
you know, I doubt I'll get to it this evening, but it's interesting you mentioned that because you've heard me talk in the past, I'm sure, about this nasty fraud, David Barton.
Yeah.
Well, he has now declared that that he is being persecuted because he had a book, and we talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
He had a book called The Jefferson Lies, and it was basically this book about how Jefferson was actually, you know, some sort of fundamentalist, kneeling, tongue-speaking, strychnine-swigging, you know, evangelical type.
Yeah.
And it turned out that just about everything in the book was a bunch of made-up baloney, okay? And even history professors at Christian colleges said that the guy was a fraud.
Yeah.
And so the publisher pulled the book. And now he has explained that that those Christian university historians who took him down did so because their minds have been ruined by secularism.
Yeah, right. What do we have to do to shake these people?
I mean, listen to this. He says, and so what happens is all these guys go through, notice there are no women historians in David Barton's world. So what happens is all these guys go through and get their PhDs, but they've been trained by really secular-minded, higher criticism type guys, and when they get there, they just communicate onto these Christian kids or whatever kind of kids they've got, whatever they've been taught. That's why today, if you do something like try to put God in history, you're going to get nailed. a book that we did, The Jefferson Lies, made all sorts of national news because all these professors came out and said Jefferson didn't believe in God, he wasn't religious, he was a great atheist. I mean, they just went bonkers when we went back through and showed all the things Jefferson did. But man, if you try to get God back into the position that we had him in history for 300 years, it just drives these PhDs nuts. Now, can you imagine that, Bill, getting God back into history?
Oh, my. Yeah.
I mean, if that won't, see, you said you liked your Tanqueray. I got it. That just sends me screaming for the cheap tequila.
Well, cheap stuff, well, man, cheap gin is, maybe that's what poisoned my mind. I don't know, but, you know, in all seriousness, I should say something about Mr. Representative La Tourette. You know, he quit Congress.
Yeah.
Why? Because you couldn't deal with this. And he handled a prosecution in Lake County where a guy who was a Mormon who wiped out a family of Mormons in the Chardon in our cottage that I knew. A buddy of mine used to live in that cottage once upon a time. And he wipes out a whole family. And that was a tough prosecution. Because in all retrospect, the guy probably was a whack job that did the killing. But man, the people in Lake County would not have stood still for anything but a hardcore prosecution. And Steve had labor connections in northeastern Ohio, and I think he finally just gave up. Because you can't, you can believe a certain thing, but you have to be willing to negotiate when common sense is on the line.
Yeah, but see, now common sense has left the building, left the room, left the building, left the hill, and left the town. And the capital of the United States is largely in the hands of lunatics. I mean, my God, going back to the very first story from this program, Louis Gohmert, Steve King, and Michelle 1L Bachman go to Egypt to speak very slowly to the Egyptians and let them know that they love liberty.
Yeah.
What? No functioning government lets those three...
I wouldn't have them out selling magazines for me.
I wouldn't let them polish a damned apple.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, I got to roll because I want to make sure everybody gets in, but it's awful good hearing from you.
It was good to hear you back, and it sounds like you had a good time as well. A fruitful time.
Well, I'll put these Fighting Bob segments up, and hopefully you'll be able to listen to them if you didn't hear them live.
Well, I sure heard a lot about him in my life, Mr. La Follette, I heard him both ways. Anyway, you take care.
All right, thanks, Bill. Bye now. And going right back to the phones in a second, a note in from Jack in Shreveport. Bingo, a signature of right-wingery. Totally agree, Bob. This is something I've noticed more through hearing everyday working-class right-wingers calling into various programs rather than just the propaganda blowhards. The right-wingers always want to bring everybody down to where they are rather than realizing that they've gotten screwed, too, and they say that every working person should have, and saying that every working person should have the benefits of union members and so forth. Yeah, the teabaggers enjoy the hog waller as long as the government keeps its hand off their Medicare. And an update from Duncan from the paper up in his neck of the woods in Northern California. Survey question. Poll. Siskiyou County's Board of Supervisors has voted to ask the state legislature to let it create a new state, and proponents hope to attract other rural North State counties. Would you support withdrawal from California? By a vote of 69% to 22% to 11% picking their teeth with toenails clippings, yes, California's too big, and too big and complex to govern, and rural areas lack proper representation. 1,065 votes to 369 no's to 195, huh, what? Yeah, and Kevin just wrote in a moment ago with a note. He said, regarding secession, Bob, and I'd forgotten to mention this, I knew there was one other place, there are folks here in Colorado who are talking secession, too. I say that we pick the names for these proposed new states, and in no particular order, states of stupidity, ignorance, racists, and idiocy. At least the name would reflect the political and social views of those who are the ones proposing this lunacy. Signed, Kevin, in the sort of free state of Colorado. I say sort of free because I live in the Springs area where focus on the family is, and I'm tired of them focusing on my family and not their own damn family. Bingo. And, hey, thanks very much to Beth, who has taken us down to needing only 40 more $40, four more folks at 10 bucks apiece, and we will have beaten Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge with 9 minutes to go in the program. So four folks, 10, two at 20, one at 40, eight at five, you know the drill. And it sure would take a lot of the sweat out of the process. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I've got a question for you.
I'll try to answer it, Jim.
As far as the stability of our union is concerned, I wonder about that. Because when you look at the former Soviet Union, the 15 republics, who would have thought that they would have dissolved into the Commonwealth of Independent States?
And we saw how well that worked too, didn't we?
Well, it basically started because of the economics of the Cold War and also the inability of Moscow to govern. And I see a lot of things happening in this country.
Well, that's why I say that we can't just sit and snicker at these rubes, okay?
Well, I don't either, because this union is not necessarily designed to last that long. That's all there is to it. There is nothing sacred or inviolable about the united whatever of anything.
No, it is dependent upon the will of the people to remain united and to go forward in terms of building that more perfect union. Well, you know, you can't build a more perfect union with a bunch of people in it who don't want one at all, can you, Jim?
Well, look at Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was a fairly consolidated republic, and then it dissolved into all those little minor states, and it created a lot of problems for them, and they're still going on. And it would appear to me as though this country is becoming, it's fragmented, losing its faith in the central government to do what it's supposed to do. And if we can't even keep our members of Congress on any type of
Well, I mean, Jim, is it just me, or is that triumvirate of twits, is that really a little bit strange?
No, it's not strange to me at all. I'm just saying that I think we're moving toward the, I really think we're moving toward the dissolution of the union of this country. And I've seen that coming a long, long time. And what really clicked it for me was what happened in the Soviet Union in 1991. I mean, who would have thought that those 15 republics that represented the strongest nation in the world and all the ties to hold it together would have broken apart? And it can happen here. And there are a lot of people who want it to happen here.
Well, when you look at numbers like what I just had out of Northern California,
yeah,
there may be more people than a lot of folks are willing to acknowledge.
Well, I don't know. Do these people who want to secede or whatever, are they going to establish their own relationships internationally and that type of thing? I mean, that sort of happened in the former Soviet Union, hasn't it, with the former Soviet Republic?
Well, no, that's the thing. These people, and that's the part of it where you know that they really haven't thought it through. They want to be a new state, but what's next? They want to be a new country? I mean, remember, that is
the next step.
Remember, Jim, the husband of the woman that in 2008 the Republican Party ran for vice president was a card-carrying member of a separatist organization in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
Tad was a member of the Alaska Party that wanted to secede from the Union and be its own country.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, there are a lot of people who are really thinking seriously about it. It's inefficient and as terrible as it might seem. I say again, united does not necessarily mean it's going to continue. I mean, how long did the Soviet Union last? 70 years.
Right. And the one thing that bears noting in that, Will points out in the chat room, and he says most of those countries were independent before the USSR formed or were independent before being absorbed by the Russian Empire.
Well, so was, I mean, look at this country and how many different things it was before we absorbed. I'm sorry, that doesn't hold water.
But, I mean, you know, South Carolina was not an independent nation.
No, but what I'm saying is when this country was established, it didn't come together all at once as one great big union.
Oh, no. We had to go through the Articles of Confederation period.
It gradually went, you know, from the Articles of Confederation and into the Constitution. And even then, you had parts of the country that didn't want to come into the United States.
No, the Constitutional Convention itself had to be called under a bit of a subterfuge.
Yeah, it did. So I'm just saying that don't be too surprised. And, you know, I take these people very seriously when they want to try to go away on their own.
Well, I think it should be. And, of course, you know, I'm kind of Lincoln-esque about it. I believe in preserving the Union because a balkanized North America is nothing but an abattoir.
Well, I don't think it would be a very efficient thing to happen.
That's like I just got a note.
Station of anything, and when you see what happened there. But nonetheless, people simply don't learn, and they don't pay attention to history, and they don't pay attention to the consequences and the ramifications.
Yeah, if only Thucydides had had God in his history, well, look where we'd be.
Well, I don't know about God and Thucydides, but I know this, that this country could very well, in the not-too-distant future, become, you know, dissolute. And that's all I had to say.
It's a terrifying thought. It really is. Jim, have a good evening.
Uh-huh.
Bye now. It may be near. Jim may be right. It may be nearer than we know. Robert, writing in from Australia, says, California too big? Bob, all I can say in response is, Western Australia. Yeah, half of a mini-continent, right? Or more? There I go, geographically challenged again. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Moran Monday. A really rousing, one of those really rousing programs where I wind up looking, oh, really? I got to get out of here now? So, to the extent that you're still on hold, my apologies. Let's try again tomorrow. And thanks to everybody who stepped up so magnificently on the fundraising issue. We are only $40 away from finishing off Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and hopefully that'll happen before we hit airtime tomorrow. Quick reminder, Dr. Bill will be live at 3 p.m. Eastern, not 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Eastern, both tomorrow and Wednesday, so adjust your schedules accordingly. He's saying things that aren't getting said anywhere else. Check him out. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, you first and foremost, who with your kind contributions make this possible at all. And thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks for the compliment on the beard, Gene. Thank you. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And here.